What happens when you combine the most innovative, eccentric, and charismatic leaders, disruptors, and founders from tech with the pedigree and history of one of the most established institutions within the City of London? Season 4 of the Searching for Mana podcast will be produced in partnership with the London Stock Exchange and will represent one of the most exciting collaborations in the tech space. I'm Lloyd Warhead, the host of Searching for Mana. We're going to be interviewing some of the leaders, influencers, and disruptors in the tech space, where I'm going to be trying to dig in and find out what's their mana, their superpower, their magic. I'm more than a trifle excited about the next stage of this journey, and I hope you'll be joining me.
It's my pleasure to welcome you to this amazing event, an opening of this fantastic exhibition by Andrea Bonacetto. So some housekeeping before, some introduction. Andrea is an Italian contemporary artist. He believes that visual art, music, and poetry can melt into a new form of art. Through NFTs, AI, and programmable art, he's trying to bring the audience into his abstract works and iconic portraits. Andrea is creating at the intersection of art and technology. He counts artistic collaborations with the likes of Sofia the Robot. We all remember this massive drop of Super Rare.
Nifty.
Yes.
Amazing job with Nifty giveaway, Sofia the Robot, and the Carrier della Sera, among others. His work has been featured on mainstream media and museum exhibitions worldwide. His most recent work, AB Infinite One, is a programmable ARC 19 NFT minted on Algorand blockchain. The artwork is updating based on the user's interaction with the piece on social networks and is currently showcased in major venues and museums around the world before it's going to be auctioned at the major auction house. Andrea has been involved in the blockchain and NFT space since the early years. We spoke to him in 2020 before we released the podcast Searching for Mana with Andrea in early 2021. He is among the founding partners at Eterna Capital, a leading investment company focused on blockchain technology. In addition, Andrea is the co-founder of Aorist, a next-generation culture and institution supporting a climate-forward NFT marketplace for artists creating at the edge of art and technology. I actually went to one of the shows of Aorist in Venice Biennale with the Drift Studio, which was amazing. It was in an abandoned church with drones and cinematic music, and I still under so much impression with that. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
For bringing that. Andrea is also a fellow of the Royal Society of Art. Yeah. It is my pleasure to welcome him back to Searching for Mana podcast. We are recording that for the next season, which is in partnership with the London Stock Exchange. So this discussion will be a fireside chat with our host, Lloyd Warhead and Andrea. Enjoy.
So that's basically covered everything.
Yes.
Thank you, Mimi. We can get really abstract now.
Yes.
Firstly, congratulations. What we can see behind us is awe-striking.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for everyone for being here tonight. Really happy.
So just to riff on what Mimi was saying, we had Andrea on the Searching for Mana podcast just over a year ago. What we're trying to do on that show is find the innovators, the disruptors, the individuals who are really fusing technology into the arts, into commerce. And what was a pleasure about the interview we did was that about 20% was about your venture capital firm, and 80% was about the fact that Andrea's found busking in Camden on a Friday night, and obviously is a real creative soul. So, it's so wonderful to see what's happened with your journey with art, first and foremost, and of course the medium being NFTs. So to open up, if you could really set the scene and explain when you first realized that you're an artist.
Okay, this is a weird story that basically I'm going to go into. I mean, realizing that being an artist, I mean, I've always been somehow like driven into creative stuff that I was for a certain point doing by myself. And there was a period, I think, until 2019, 2020, that I had that dichotomy between investing in the blockchain space, you know, being quite early in crypto, and as you said, you know, with Eterna making investments, and then at the same time going here in London around busking, drawing, and doing a lot of things that I was doing because I felt that, you know, that was who I am, and it was very important for me to keep doing. Then 2020, you know, when the NFT trend came about, I was like, okay, now I'm by chance at the intersection between art and tech myself. There is no way I don't get involved as a creator as well. And that's where, you know, I started more actively getting involved, being open about what I was doing. And as Mimi was saying, my first release then was with Sofia last year, and I have to thank Marcello that is here, that he made also the introduction to the whole team, and we put, I think, a great project together.
Andrea, and, it was an infamous project. Congratulations, Marcello. Just for anybody who's not aware, or if you give us a layer further, what happened with that project? What was it?
It was a collaboration between me and Sofia. It was basically co-creating again an NFT, and it was me portraying Sofia and her immediate family, and then Sofia through her neural network looking at what I did and reinterpreting my works. And then we basically did loops and transitions between the human and the robot, going back to the human. And that, I think, in you know, last year, March, so, you know, was the period where, you know, people had that record sale on Christie's, and it was, I think, a good time, you know, for the entire NFT space. It really went very well, and from there onwards, then I started doing things also by myself as a creator.
Thank you. So, AB Infinite One, my surname's Warhead, which is Lebanese, which means one.
Okay, good.
So I'm curious what the one refers to. Is this going to be a progressive series, or is the one infinite?
So this is the title of the artwork that you see actually right here. And AB Infinite One, so why the name? Ab Infinite, so from Latin, it means from infinity, and one symbolized like the beginning. So it's a sort of cycle from infinity to the very beginning.
It's not just your name.
It's also my AB, and also another element that was very important is that because is using, I then have to use the hashtag as well. No one used AB Infinite One as an hashtag before. So I was like, okay, cool, let's use that as well. And then how does the piece work? So as you see, it's a very large abstract artwork. It's a sort of like snapshot on my entire life. And there are some portions of the artwork, like this one, for instance, that is actually programmable. So the audience, so all of you, can interact with the piece and change it. And how you do that? You need to go to the website of the piece, which is abinfinite1.com. And then if you click join, you can share your Instagram and Twitter accounts. And at that point, whenever you share content on social media using the hashtag abinfinite1, together with Agash, that is here, we built like a custom-made AI and software that is basically every day taking all this information from all the users that are using the hashtag and then reinterpreting that into the piece and incorporating that into the piece in a way that is also aesthetically pleasing, meaning that the AI is also able to understand the color palette of the piece. And so, you know, it basically alters the piece. There is also a poem in the piece. And I like to see it as a sort of modern Ulysses of Joyce, that section, because whatever people are saying on Twitter and Instagram using the hashtag, then the software is going to take this information and they're going to throw it into the piece, and it's going to be, I don't know what it's going to be. I mean, we'll see tomorrow.
Andrea, could you say a line or two from the poem?
I don't remember now. The thing is, it's very abstract as a poem. So it's basically a bunch of words that, yeah, they're like quite connected, but also disconnected, if you see what I mean. Actually, at some point, it's going to show up, I think.
So it shows up in the actual vocabulary?
This is not programmable. That part that you see there is actually not programmable, but the part that is programmable is like a yellow one in the middle.
And just to understand that way that users can interact with it, mm-hmm. How would you see that? So, like, let's use one example of somebody posting a hashtag and then...
Yes. So to give an example, this part, this pyramid, this is actually generative. So it's the result of us training the AI, and this is the output. And in a couple of days, this will be different. So this is an example.
And so something that I'm always curious about with this type of progressive art is at a certain moment in time, it might be for somebody how they prefer it. where's your feel as the artist in terms of being able to capture it at points and retain that if you like it in that instance versus just allowing it to evolve?
Yeah, so the way I see it is that I'm just giving the initial, you know, go, start, and then it basically goes free, and it's no more in my hands, and it's really about people interacting with the piece. And I like that it's a permanently incomplete work, because technically everyone could, you know, keep interacting with it forever. And one thing also that I want to mention is that this approach is also possible due to the technology we used, which is the Algorand blockchain, which allows us to create this kind of generative work on chain. So this work is a generative programmable work on chain that is upgradable, meaning that the NFT has been minted already yesterday, and the more people interact with the piece, the more it's gonna change, and every day a new version of the NFT will be minted, but it will be nested within the initial NFT. So whoever then buys the piece in the end will be able to see the full history of the piece, fully on chain. And on Algorand you can do it because also, you know, the transaction costs are very low, it's very fast, it's very environmentally friendly. Something like that right now on Ethereum would have not been possible.
So I just want to understand the mastery of Algorand then. But before that, to understand really, if one were to buy this at the point that you were to sell it and how you were to sell it, is it then locked in? So that cycle that it's progressed through is recurring. It won't forevermore evolve.
That will really depend on the collector. So the collector could choose then to keep the artwork alive forever, or they could choose to lock the artwork in time. So what they have to do is we defined like a pot to pay for the transaction costs. So the collector could top up that and keep it going, or they can actually freeze it. So it would be up to the person buying it.
And so you said it wouldn't be possible on Ethereum, just to get slightly technical if we can.
Yeah.
In brief, why?
So the reason why it wouldn't be possible is because transactions on Ethereum are very expensive. So, you know, each transaction would cost around, I don't know, $50, $100. They'd also be quite slow and not energy efficient. So as you can imagine, you know, if you have to update that every day at a certain point, you know, it won't really make sense to keep updating. Whereas on Algorand, it's going to cost 0.0001 fraction of a dollar. And it's also very quick and carbon efficient. So it was like a win-win to use that technology.
Yeah, that's clearly one of the amazing things, is that it's good for the environment. And anybody who knows Andrea knows he has initiatives and a foundation that is focused on green and environment for art. Could you talk to us a little bit about that, please, as well?
Yes, so as I said, you know, my profile is quite complex because I'm doing several things, and people can think like, what the hell are you doing? You know, you have a fund, you're starting a company, you do art, like, get your things together. But the reality is that they are all interconnected, and I don't like, you know, this way of labeling people of, oh, you're an entrepreneur, you're an artist, you're whatever, you know. I try to be coherent with myself, and I see that all these elements are interconnected. Now, to give an example of what Lloyd mentioned, I've also started a company called Auris, which is a very like aspirational cultural institutions in the NFT space. It is really about bringing creators to the next level for very aspirational projects. So it's something that I'm trying to do myself as an artist, you know, with projects like you are seeing, you know, today. But I don't want to be alone. Like, I would like to help other people. So we are a group and we can do things together, and we can really bring the NFT to the next level, because there is also a lot of stigma on NFTs, right? Some people think, you know, NFTs are a scam, doesn't make sense to buy a JPEG, why would you pay for an image, etc. Here we're basically saying, look, with NFTs you can go next level, you can really do things that you couldn't even imagine before. And it's really about, you know, your imagination is the limit, and you can do so much more than you do in physical art. So it's about seeing the NFT as a sort of an additional brush that the creator has, and then it's on them to create.
I was at a talk, as somebody who wrote the biography for Francis Bacon recently, and what I found very interesting was Francis Bacon's technique, of which was to get drunk for 18 hours a day, and then in a slight window, this pocket before he collapsed into bed, to every single day produce art. And so this made me think of this era, actually, because in some way you're trying to remove your consciousness and your logic, which we can find in certain professions, and you're trying to fuse that with the unconscious, because perhaps that's when we can be most creative. Or that's my justification for Francis Bacon, anyway. What's your process? What's your technique? Give us a walk through how this occurred.
I can tell you already that I don't create only if I get wasted or overdosed at the end of the day. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Probably today would be a good time to create then, because it's from this morning that you know I'm around showing the piece and in Oxford Circus. But my process is really very simple. It's about trying to go back, you know? So this is a very important point. People think that from when we are kids to when we are, let's say, our age, we actually evolve. I'm not really sure about that, because actually we get accustomed to, you know, society that has many rules and you should not trust the other person because you don't know what can happen and everything. So my process is the way back, is to basically trying now to destroy all that structures that are created in your mind based on, I don't know, your family, your upbringing, whatever they thought you was right and everything, and go back to that dimension when you were a kid and you were really, truly pure, right? You could create things as they were. There is a very important Italian poet called Benedetto Croce that used to say that before 18 years old, everyone writes poetry. After 18 years old, only two kinds of people write poetry, the poets and the idiots. Now, meaning that if you are able to go back to that level of really being truly yourself and looking at the world and discovering new things, that's what you can create. And I'm trying to do that. Of course, what is the difficult element is that in this very like interconnected world where there are so many things that you have to check every day, Twitter, you get like 1 million notifications and everything, it's difficult to unplug. That's why for me it's been very important, and I know that you like to be more philosophical in our conversations, has been very important, because you know that I like literature and stuff, tangential on Asian philosophy, like Swami Vivekananda, Indian philosophy, where they basically teach you to control yourself regardless from the kind of environment you're in, and to be basically to live net of the situation that you're in, to really be truly plugged to the source, which is when you, I think, you do, you know, high quality creative work.
Yeah, I find it very inspiring in the business that I work within. When we're looking for the greatest entrepreneurs, we have a much more English, simple way of saying it, which is look for somebody who can both be 8 years old and 80 years old. Mm. And that contrast works very well. Bowie famously said, where great creativity happens is when you just lose your tiptoes when you're walking into the ocean, but not much deeper than that. And so just to come back to one point, which is slightly topical, we're in May 2022, and of course crypto has had a little moment, as it does, but I mean, it's quite a dramatic moment. Does that affect NFTs? Is there a price of, and sorry if this is going just one layer too far, Algorand being up or Algorand being down, where the NFT can be as valuable?
I think that if you have been long enough in the blockchain space, you know that things go up, things go down, everything is cyclical. The important thing is that the trend is upward, and I have no doubt that the trend is upward, because it's a very profound kind of innovation that we're all witnessing, that I think is a big paradigm shift. So the reality is that if you were probably money grabbing with NFTs during 2020-2021, yes, it's gonna kill you. But if you had a very long-term aspirational approach, as I'm trying, you know, to have, that's actually okay. It's not a problem, like you pretty much depeg from that kind of market, I would say.
So just to wrap up the open conversation, let's go back to AB Infinite Wahed. What's the plan for it? What's the journey? I know it's going on this monumentous tour. Could you talk us through the logistics, please?
Yeah, so actually, if you're also not too tired today, after the event, we are going with whoever is still, you know, has the strength to do it, to Oxford Circus. Where you'll see the big version of this is on 36 8K high definition screens from W1 Curates, and it's really an amazing experience. So whoever, you know, has the strength, I would encourage to go. And then this is the beginning, because then it's gonna go into several venues all over the world.
Sorry, Andrea, how long is it there for anybody who's...
For 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks.
It will be there for 2 weeks. Yeah. And then it's gonna
on the whole time, 24/7.
Yes, pretty much.
Amazing.
Pretty much. And then it's going to go to the Decentral Art Pavilion at the Venice Biennale,
yep.
To the Museo della Permanente in Milan, then to another museum in China, one in Turkey, and then one is not yet sure, but it might go as well in New York. And then in a place in Manchester as well, like on some like very big and major screens there. And more to be added, you know, during the summer, like more can come. And then at the end of the tour, it will come back at W1 Curates in Oxford Circus in the internal screens. And that's where we are going to auction it.
And can I ask why you didn't put it on one of the current options that you could have auctioned it on?
Well, because it was impossible to do it for the kind of complexity that we went for. Because it's, to go really specific, this is an Arch19 NFT on Algorand, which is a protocol that was basically released about around a week ago.
So it could go onto OpenSea, for instance?
No, because I mean, it's on Algorand, and OpenSea does not support Algorand. And this is something that is really focusing on arriving at the highest possible level in terms of, you know, on-chain activity for generative and programmable art. And so we really had to build everything custom. And we have our own, you know, process that I described in details, you know, on Twitter yesterday. And as well, if you go on the website, abinfinite1.com, you'll be able to actually see in details, you know, what we use. But it's completely custom. And my mindset is, this is the first step. The kind of work that we do after are going to build on top of this and even be, you know, bigger. But this is like the starting point.
I mean, what would that even look like? I look forward to seeing it. Just to wrap up before we do a few Q&As for anyone in the audience who's got questions. The show's Searching for Mana, so Mana is magic, and of course you've been on the show, so we know what your magic is. I'd like to ask, what is the piece's magic?
I don't know. I mean, it's a representation of me and what goes on in my mind. As you see, I have, you know, very abstract way of conceptualizing things in general. And I think that, you know, that abstract kind of artworks that I'm doing are sort of a map of how my brain works. And then there are the portraits that you can see here that they could become part of the work because, you know, you could take a picture of one of them, use the hashtag, and then the software will gonna take them, boom, and throw it into the piece. And that abstract element still is in the eyes, because I think that, you know, by looking at people in the eyes, you understand who they are.
Andrea, whilst you look at me in the eyes, you promised me one of those portraits.
Yes,
where is it?
I have many of these pending promises. I'm saying yes to everyone, but it's a bit of a commitment.
Okay,
but I will do it. I'll
before
do it.
You're the next
yes.
people.
Now it's also
let's
like,
do it quick.
Now you also have a video to prove that I actually said that I'll do it. So I have
yeah,
to do it.
This is being recorded. Yes. Okay, well, look, congratulations. Fantastic. It's so exciting. I love it. You know, with NFTs, sometimes it can be very technical, it can be marketed well, but I think aesthetically it's beautiful to see. And the participation is so exciting as well. So massive congratulations. Before the Q&A, is there anything else that you wanted to talk to everybody about?
No, I mean, I'm just, you know, open to answer any kind of questions. As I said, don't forget to go on the website, abinfinite1.com, put the hashtag, the handles, and then use the hashtag to, so then, you know, everything that happens today is also part of the piece. I think that would be great. And then, yeah, I'm quite, you know, open on Twitter, so I think that's the best place to reach out to me, and now I'm available, so any questions you have, more than happy.
Just before we go to questions, a round of applause for Andrea.
Thank you.
Over to questions in the audience, and I'll come and run around.
She has one question.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to basics, like, as in how did you make this? Because is this basically just a rolling stream of like a, because it just moves, but it's kind mm-hmm. of, there are steps, I feel like it's static, right? And then it just
yes.
keeps moving.
So the way I made it is, these are all vectorial artworks, and the beauty of it is that I can actually increase the dimensions and they will never lose definition. So they can be huge, like enormous. So that's the beauty of it. And my process is I start with an iPad Pro, And I do, you know, the drawing from scratch, really. I don't use any kind of pre-existing content. They're all done from scratch. And then I fine-tune them on the desktop, like mostly using Adobe Illustrator. Sometimes I use Adobe After Effects as well to animate them a bit. But as you said, you know, these are quite straightforward, moving, static artworks. I like to innovate more on the NFT element, on the programmability element. And I like that are static because I want people to actually see, you know, what I did without any distraction.
Congratulations, Michael.
Thank you.
You may not answer this, but what is your favorite part of the piece?
My favorite part of the piece? The one that you are going to interact with and you're going to generate yourself. It's true. Like the generative part. I'm really curious to see how the generative part is gonna pan out.
What actually motivated you to do that piece?
Motivated me? I mean, I don't really have any kind of motivation, I would say. It's just about, I don't know, like, I felt like doing it and it was very coherent with what I felt, and then I started really doing it. For me, it was really something very honest that I felt, you know, inside me, that I really felt that I had to do it in a context where, you know, if you think about it, 2019, going basking in Camden Town and like that, it was like, what are you doing? Like, it's very weird, you know? But then, by chance, really, this new wave came and I was at the right place at the right time, and I felt, okay, I can actually amplify what I'm doing. And I realized that one thing that then kept probably motivating me was interacting with people, ensuring that, you know, I could have an exchange with people based on who I am and not really, you know, the mask that people put in and they pretend to be something, you know, with their daily stuff that they're doing and they're not feeling represented by that. So that was very important for me.
So my question is, do you ever look back at other artists, like contemporary artists, and get inspiration from them? Because seeing your work, I think of Boyd and one of his tuto paintings in terms of colors and all of the ideas that put on his work.
For sure. So looking at, let's say, the non-NFT side of the world, one big inspiration for me has been Kandinsky. And the time where I really started drawing a lot more was when I was around 30 years old, and I read this book concerning the spiritual in art of Vasily Kandinsky. And then, you know, it's a book that basically Kandinsky was also someone that he started doing art at 30 years old before he was like a professor. So I really connected a lot with that, and that was definitely a great source of inspiration. And then looking at the modern world, you know, with all the artists that you are engaging through Auris, these are a great source of inspiration from me. Like, I've spoken with many of them, you know, people like Refik, Andres Ressinger, and others that are, yeah, people that I look up to, and I think, you know, they set the bar always higher, and it's great to witness that and to do something very aspirational altogether. Also, you know, what was mentioned before, the Studio Drift show that we did at Venice Biennale, these are all things that they helped me understand how far you can go. And the important element is really conceptually do something that is profound and honest. And yeah, that's what inspired me.
Thank you, Andre. It's wonderful to be here with you this evening. We've known each other for several years. And it's beautiful to see some of the artwork and to see you progress as an artist. And I think everybody will like to congratulate you on your fame and fortune. But this is the past, and I'm really interested to know how you think technology will drive in the future and what new trends will develop, and whether it be adoption, whether it be screening, whether it be the way that we consume or create art, mm-hmm. and whether that be a moving picture or have music or moves into the metaverse. I'd be really interested to know how you think things will proceed over the next 5 to 10 years. And thank you very much.
Yes, thanks a lot, Shane. The way I see it is that from a platform standpoint, interoperability will be something very important, because, you know, there are these amazing communities on the different blockchain platforms, and it makes sense that they're all able to talk to each other. An element that I feel is game-changing is the metaverse and projecting all these works into the metaverse, projecting even this event that we are having right now in the metaverse, you know, where everything is an NFT and we can interact with it. And you know, our life is mostly digital at the moment, so it makes sense to have a digital representation that is not in the dimension of life, is then in the dimension of dreams, I like to say, in the sense that it's not that the metaverse is gonna be this, right? Maybe, I don't know, Shane, like what you wanna be, like in your dreams, but you could have that as an avatar and then explore this new world with that. And I'm hoping that in the next 5 years, we use that as a mean to access opportunities, and then we consume those opportunities in the real world. Because it's basically a way more engaging way to speak with people that are at the other side of the world rather than, you know, having a video call. But then I think that the physical element is still important, you know, meeting in real life. And I'm hoping that that remains.
That's the
okay.
Physical feedback.
That's the physical. In the metaverse, it wouldn't happen. It would never happen, you see?
It knows.
Now I lost the flow. What was I saying? I don't know, I forgot, but I think you got the point.
Ciao.
Hey, so I have a question. A lot of artists, I think, question also, how does their art transition and transcend its aesthetic value? So how does it transcend the beauty of it, the visual value of it? So my question to you is, as someone who's trying something new and experimenting, mm-hmm. what do you hope for your art in its transcendence of aesthetic value and what it means for society or the people who view it?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. Basically, what I would say is this. I feel that how I would like to transcend art is not through conceptual art. This is actually something that, this is like my personal opinion, many people would disagree with that. But I'm thinking that if you want to express a very profound concept through art, express that concept, like tell me what the concept is. Because I don't know, probably it's me that I'm not a very sensible person, but it's very difficult to cryptically understand, you know, certain things. But the way I think art should transcend towards society is a way of getting people, as I'm trying to do right now, you know, to become part of the world, to co-create things together. And this is really a stepping stone to say, look, with blockchain, it's not that you necessarily need to go and you know, gift your data to Google, Facebook, Amazon, and others. You can be in a situation where you actually take control of your data, and at least like a minimum level is guaranteed for you to survive as a human being. And then it's about, you know, you creating and being involved with the world, like being yourself. And I think that that would represent a massive leapfrog step for society, right? Because if people are really truly themselves, that's when they can do their best work. I don't know, me personally, I was at a point where I was unable to fit into a certain, you know, paradigm, like, okay, you studied finance, then, you know, go work in investment banking. I wouldn't be able to do it. Like, I was unable to do it. I would really, I could do it, maybe I would suffer a lot. So I'm hoping that through art, through new technologies, through automation as well, you know, because many works will become redundant, AI will do many of the works that, you know, us humans are doing, the robots as well. So we just need to face, you know, these things, because you like it or not, are happening. And art should be the channel to show people, look, you can be yourself, do whatever you want. It's not about like me saying something is good, is bad, transcending art. It's about really engaging in an authentic way. And as you see, even now, you know, I'm trying to engage, you know, with all of you in a quite raw and authentic way.
Andrea, are you able to engage with us for just 3 more questions?
Yeah, of course.
I know you're very exhausted.
Even more.
Very exhausted and drunk.
No,
okay, so
I'm not drunk.
We'll do a few more questions.
Hi, Andrea. Thank you so much for your continued support in my startup, Zigloo, and I hope we can celebrate.
Ah, great. Thank you.
You know, we'll celebrate with Robin.
Thank you for selling Zigloo.
No problem. My question is, like, as a long-term NFT investor, I was wondering if you were creating a community. Is there going to be multiple projects or perks? What is the long-term vision about this community? And hopefully lots of people in this room, and, you know, we can celebrate afterwards as well.
You mean, sorry, what was the question again?
So are there going to be much community perks by participating in this?
Perks?
Yeah.
Look, like, to be honest, I'm someone that is, I did it in the past, you know, I think that the dimension of incentivizing your collectors is great, yeah. But I'm against, you know, actually something that I did, so I'm contradicting myself now, incentivizing collectors with perks. in the sense that the best perk that you can get is the creator that you are supporting to really go next level with the kind of content, exhibitions, because if then you know you have one of their piece, you know that it's gonna do quite well. Because you see, in the end, the NFT space follows the economic rules of supply and demand, right? So if you give perks in the form of NFTs to people, you are pretty much inflating your supply of NFTs, and this basically devalues the value of all the other NFTs that you have. So yeah, I think that's my take on that. You're welcome.
Hi, so I really like your artwork, and I have a question, maybe too technical. It's like, why you choose Algorand? It's like, there are so many layer ones.
Yeah.
But why is special layer one? Support your artworks. I know, like, for MPs, right? Actually, Flow, like, you can do something better, but why you choose Algorand?
So Algorand is a project that I've known since many years. We have been investing, you know, with my fund in Algorand since 2018, and I've got to know Silvio Micali, the founder, everyone, and it's really a serious group of people, and they build a really outstanding technology. Just to, you know, some context, Silvio Micali, the founder of Algorand, is a Turing Award winner in 2012, which is the equivalent of the Nobel Prize for Computing Science. He's an MIT full professor of computing science. He's someone that invented the, pretty much the building blocks of modern cryptography, like zero-knowledge proof and others. So it gives me a lot of assurance in terms of building something on a chain that will actually stay long term. And then I think also the release that they made recently of the Arch 19 NFTs is something that is perfect for programmable art. And yeah, on this, if you want to go very technical, I suggest you speak with Agash, that is actually here, that was very instrumental in bringing this project to life from a technical standpoint, because it was very complex. It was all ad hoc, and we were really, yeah, trying to experiment. But this is like a social experiment, I would say. And Algorand gave us the safety that it was possible and you could do things like the way we wanted it.
I've heard you all evening and I'm very, very impressed. I'm involved in a lot of tech projects and a lot of conferences. Would you like to be a part of a Metaverse Week in London?
Yeah.
Properly, because London needs something like that, doesn't it, Shane?
Yes.
It really, really needs it. You've got FinTech Week, you've got any old tech week, but you don't have Metaverse and NFT Week. I think it's about
time.
Yes.
Is that a yes?
It is a yes.
Okay, I'll book it. Let's start.
Thank you.
Okay, so just to wrap up, incredibly inspiring. I was the best man once at a wedding in Portofino.
You're comparing these shows to that. Okay.
That was much better. That was much more glamorous.
Okay.
But I learned one thing, and it was how to, in your mother language, wish good luck for the future, which is centeni. So if we could all wish this project, Anna, is that correct? Right?
What? No,
centeni?
I don't know what you're talking about.
My understanding, maybe I was in France, but I think centeni.
I think so.
I think centeni means to the next 100 years. So
okay.
Centeni.
We just invented a new word in the Italian vocabulary, but that's okay. That's fine. Let's say that. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Perfect. Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you.